Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate. Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. We are a retreat center. We offer spiritual guidance, Christian meditation, and personal development. Once a week, I invite a visitor to join me in the studio to talk about our center, our programs, social justice, different cultures, or the Bible. Today, my visitor is Father Kevin Waldie. Father Kevin, a warm welcome and Haida Maita Radio program.
Thank you. It's great to be here once again.
Father Kevin is a Marist father. He's originally from Timaru, the South Island of New Zealand, and is a lecturer in Bible studies at Good Shepherd College. He's come to Muffin Talk a few times, and I'm always happy when he comes and when he gives a talk at the Mercy Spirituality Center. On the 21st of November this year, Father Kevin will come to our center again with a presentation on gratitude in the Bible, gracious God of Israel and Jesus, Son of God. Father Kevin, we are now in the month of September. It's almost over, but which is the month that is very special to many Christians in the Middle East and in North Africa. The Coptic Christians, who are mainly from Egypt and Eritrea and Northeast Africa, they have just celebrated their New Year last week. And the Chaldean Catholics, who are mainly from the area of Iraq, Turkey, Syria, Iran, they have a great veneration of the cross, which is celebrated here in September. Sometimes we Roman Catholics tend to forget that there are other Catholics around us. What is it that all Catholics have in common? What makes us Catholic?
Well, I think you have to go back to the word Catholic itself. And of course, it comes from Greek and it means universal, or if you want to say all-encompassing, you know, so it's about a very broad collection of people who are of the same mind in the main, and they would also believe certain things in common. And I think that's what we as a church believe in. We believe that when we say we're Roman Catholics, we mean that we are focused on Rome, where the Pope is resident, but we also then have a sense of a worldwide expanse of people who might speak different languages but believe in the same basic doctrines, etc. And so we say that everyone's welcome within this assembly, and we call it the Assembly of God, or the what in Greek is called the ecclesia, the church. And I think that's the thing, where everyone's called in to be part of one enterprise that has a particular focus. And so I would then go on to say that that focus obviously is Christ himself for us as Christians. And that then fits into a whole big picture of how God comes to us and expresses himself, and really then illustrates how we are to see ourselves in relation to other people. So we might be Catholics from all around the world, but some of us might be Roman or Coptic or Chaldean, but what happens is that we would be very Eucharist-focused. We also would have a season of feasts and things that we would observe, but we might be observing them according to a different calendar. Now, that doesn't make any difference. It's about the fundamental approach to the feasts of the Lord, the feasts of the saints, our regular celebration of the Eucharist on a Sunday, you know, for instance, that has a real focus to it. So that's what I'd say is what it is to be Catholic. And so you don't have to be in the same mold exactly, but what you're doing is you are adhering to a fundamental collection of truths which are really centered on Christ, who in the mystery that we call the Christ event or the Paschal event is the one who suffered, died, and rose again. So how you celebrate that will be slightly different in many respects, but it is fundamentally the same. And so if you're Eucharistically based, if you are prayerfully based in the a ritual and a tradition, then you manifest the same beliefs. You proclaim it to the world.
So you have like a hierarchy, and you have Christians, and then we have the Catholics, and then the Catholics are also different groups. And then you have then the Roman Catholics, and then the Roman Catholics have also different traditions within the Roman Catholic tradition.
Yeah.
And what about the term universal church?
Well, I think, you know, that's always the thing, that if you think about the end of Matthew's gospel, where he's been talking to a Jewish-type audience right throughout his gospel, and then at the very end he says, go out into the whole wide world, proclaim the good news, baptizing in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, that shows you then that there is an immediate focus you might have depending on the audience that you're addressing, but the larger picture is to embrace everyone, and so the universe becomes part of that. And I think also when you look at other parts of the scriptures, say particularly when you come up against, say, the letter to the Colossians or Ephesians, you've got this much bigger sense of what it is to be church. So once upon a time, in the early days of Christianity, there were these things called house churches. So little pockets of people, believers, gathering for Eucharist and prayer. But as the body of believers expands, then you have to think of a much broader idea. And so there, in the certain prayers and that are part of Colossians and Ephesians, you get a sense of the universe that we know around us. And that then becomes a mirror image of what the church is to be too. Like it's reaching out to the stars almost. And we would say in the Acts of the Apostles, to take the message to the ends of the earth. And that's precisely it, because here we are in little old New Zealand at the bottom of the world. I'm a Marist father. We came from France to the ends of the world to bring the good news. And I think that exhibits exactly what it is to be inspired by the Word of God and then to want to go out and share it and be alive in the good news.
Yeah. Thank you for this clarification, Father Kevin. And for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk. This program is brought to you by the Mercy Spirituality Center in Ipsum. If you miss any of our programs, please check out www.planetaudio.org.nz/Muffin Talk or visit our website or Facebook page at Tengaka Waiora Mercy Spirituality Center. My visitor today is Father Kevin Waldy, and we've just talked about the term Catholic and what makes us Catholic. And I also talked about the Middle Eastern Catholics or Christians who are celebrating very much the 14th of September, which we just had. What is the 14th of September for us Roman Catholics?
Well, this is one of the key feasts of the year. Just as we were saying before, you know how Catholics are observing a certain calendar, and there are particular feasts of the Lord and then other feasts of the saints. Well, this is one of the key feasts, the Exaltation of the Holy Cross, or you might call it the Veneration of the Cross. And I think it is a key focus point for us as Catholics and as people of Christian faith to look at the cross and to try and understand as a symbol what it says to us. And that makes me think about the crucifix and its place in our lives, or the sign of the cross that we make across our bodies on occasions. So we gather frequently to pray, or we might just come around the table, say perhaps in the evening, and we say grace. And so we bless ourselves with the sign of the cross beforehand and then bless the table. And those things come as second nature, but they're a reminder that the cross is one of the central acts of faith, as it were, that we adhere to, that we proclaim. And I think that's the important thing, that you suddenly see what the cross means. We have a symbol, but do we really think about the symbol. And so, for instance, as a religious priest, I wear often a symbol on my lapel that has the cross, and then it might have a Marian symbol that's associated with it. And I think that's the whole thing, that we all walk in the shadow of the cross. And even, say, when I made my final profession as a Marist, I received a cross, a crucifix, with the body of Christ on one side and the image of the Blessed Virgin on the other. And so that's constantly with me. That's a reminder of who I am as a religious, but also as a Catholic, as someone who believes in a central mystery, which is Christ suffered, died, and rose again, and that we are part of a much larger story of salvation than just our personal selves. So, you know, I think the veneration of the cross as a feast day in September is a wonderful one, just to make us stop for a moment and think, what do we believe the cross to be? Why is it all around us? You know, people have crucifixes on the wall. You go into a church, you see a major crucifix there, and it's often behind the altar. Well, that's reminding you that we remember constantly the sacrifice that Christ made for us all. And also, I've got this other connection that I think is quite important too, which is on the very next day after the 14th is the 15th of September, when there is the feast day of Our Lady of Sorrows, or sometimes in New Zealand it's called Our Lady of Compassion. And what that does is that picks up the Gospel of Mary and the beloved disciple standing at the foot of the cross and being commissioned by Jesus to form a community that goes forward but proclaims the passion, death, and resurrection of the Lord. And I thought, well, you know, there you've got the Blessed Virgin again, who comes into the picture, because she is part of the life of the future church. And I think that's the great thing, that the cross then inspires us to do all sorts of things. You know, we look to the cross, but we just don't see the death of Jesus. We see the resurrection at the same time.
But also 10 days later is the Feast of Our Lady of Mercy.
That's right. And so I think, you know, these are beautifully connected, because that's the whole point of what is that sacrifice about? It's because of the great love and mercy of God reaching out to touch us all. And I think that in churches, the crucifix often looms large, doesn't it? And you see something that hits you in the face almost, and you say, yes, I believe, but I just don't believe in the death. I believe in the resurrection too. And that's the thing. Sometimes you'll see a resurrected Christ with his arms outstretched to symbolize the ongoing vision and the memory that we have. And I think that's it. The cross, the crucifix, has to be something that reminds you constantly of what you're committed to yourself and why it was necessary that Christ suffered, died, and rose again.
And in the beginning of the Christianity, it wasn't even the symbol of Christianity. I think it was first the fish, and then it became
right.
The cross.
Yep.
And let's talk about your talk that you're going to give in November. So earlier this year, you gave a wonderful talk on the topic Psalms and St. Luke's Gospel. Now, your talk on the 21st of November will be just before the end of the year of the Gospel, according to Luke, is finishing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll give a presentation on gratitude in the Bible, gracious God of Israel and Jesus, Son of God. What can we expect and look forward to?
Well, I thought I won't reveal the text I'm going to offer and use that day, but what I thought was that I'd tell you basically the general outline of what I'm doing and why I phrased that talk the way it's set out. I thought that, you know, we are people of the good book, the Bible, and it's my discipline to study it and to interpret it using the original language texts. But fundamentally, all of us are to be inspired by the contents of the Old and the New Testaments. And I thought it's a wonderful way for us just to take a theme and focus. So by using the gratitude theme, I want to take some examples from the Old Testament that basically talk about the God who's our God as well, but the God that we share with the Jewish faith, etc. And therein, you've got wonderful examples of how God interacts with humanity and the waywardness, perhaps, of the human beings, you know, that even though they might be people of the covenant, that is, they're the chosen people, they enter into the special bond with the Lord, and he reveals the Torah, the teaching that he wants them to observe so that they become more and more holy like him, then you see right across the spectrum of all the books of the Old Testament the wonderful way in which God speaks to us in one instance and then the way God acts for us in another instance. And I thought, well, then we'll pick up on some of those ideas, and in particular the things that detail the way God does things for us and serves us in a sense, and that we're meant to, in homage, serve him back, you know. But the thing is that is this God is a real God, is a God who touches people's lives. And that then makes me conscious that when we come into the New Testament, obviously we're dealing with Jesus incarnate, you know, the enfleshing of the Son of God in our midst. And in the gospel stories and the letters of the New Testament, we get to know who that Jesus is. We find something which is an extension, almost, of the God of the Old Testament. So what you're doing is you're hearing and seeing in the flesh this historic person that we call Jesus, but we know him to be both human and divine. And everything then that's recounted in those texts brings us in touch with him, and he touches us by what we hear and what we see done. And I think what that does then inspires a sense of great gratitude in your heart that you have been witness to something that is a matter of faith in the first instance, but something that enlivens you every day because you know that you have a God and the Son of God who walks with you, and then they send the Spirit that walks alongside you. Because, you know, the thing is that the Spirit is called the Paraclete. That is, the one who's called to walk alongside you, in parallel with you. And I think that's a beautiful thought, that we constantly then go forward in our daily lives, and whatever we experience, whatever sadness, whatever sorrow, we come and we suddenly know deep within us a sense of the presence of God.
And you mentioned that the Spirit wants us to walk aside with us.
Yeah.
And the other day I heard somebody saying, when Jesus said, "Follow me," he didn't mean walk behind me, but he said, follow me in the way of going the same way and walking alongside with him.
Walk in my footsteps, basically. You know, because the thing is that Jesus was with us for a very short time in the human existence. Therefore, everyone is going to be a follower walking in his footsteps, but they make Christ present to the world if, that is, you conform to what Jesus teaches, and then what God the Father, in a sense, if we're going to start talking in a Trinitarian way, presented via the Old Testament texts. And I think you've got a wonderful array of texts there that sort of stir you up, you know, get the Spirit moving within you, and then you say, ah, I never really noticed that much before, but now that I've come to understand how God speaks and acts, I then know that I must really remember well the things that God has done for me, or Jesus, if you want to name him in a particular way. And I think too that in the Catholic tradition, we've got this wonderful way of celebrating Eucharist, which is at the heart of gratitude as well. And, you know, when you start thinking about the Eucharist as a Greek word in the first instance, then you know that at its core is the notion of gift or favour, so the word charis in Greek, and as part of the language connection, you've got the Greek word chara, which is joy. And so I think that once you start making all these connections, you suddenly realize that you've been immersed in a great sea of grace that then should well up within us as we recognize what we've been introduced to by way of faith, and then we rejoice. You know, we sing with hearts of joy.
I think it's wonderful that you take the word apart, because sometimes you understand the word and the meaning a lot better if you understand each word. It's just like what you just said with Eucharist, but also when we think here in New Zealand with whakawhanaungatanga, if you see that there's whānau in tanga, and I think that that gives us a deeper insight. And as you mentioned, kara is joy.
Yeah. And so we've got, you know, these are the things that I'm constantly aware of, that when people come to read the Bible, therefore, they don't see the fullness of what it's expressing and all the connections that come through language in particular. And so the Greek and Hebrew of the Bible are wonderful sources for insight. And that's part of my job, of course, to try and bring that out and explain it. But when we come across terms like Eucharist and the sense of ourselves being Eucharistic people, I think then you have to have the spirit of thanksgiving and gratitude to be able to recognize what you have been given by way of faith, and then by way of church companionship and celebration, and the weekly Eucharist that we have as a regular basis of our lives, but then also pours over into other aspects of life as well. So your daily life is, in a sense, inspired by the weekly celebration of Eucharist as a large body of people, and then by your daily expression of love and care for other people, so that if you're going out to love your neighbour, also behind that must be love of God first and foremost. So you've got a nice balance there, and a sense of the Eucharist is not just a once a week thing, but something that's in your heart, and then it inspires you to be joyful and to be people of the good news. You know, that's
what you're supposed to do after Mass. You go out and be a witness of the good news.
Yes, go in peace. The Mass is ended, you know, but it isn't really, because what you're doing is you're taking it with you. You are going to proclaim the peace, the shalom that God gives to each one of us, and that we then bring to other people. You know, that there is a sense then that you are sent forth to the ordinary world that most of us live in every day, but by our lives we will speak to others of God's love and peace and the great thanksgiving that is part of our lives, to be truly, you know, people of gratitude.
And what you said in your talk about St. Luke's Gospel, there are so many references to gratitude, to grace, and to other words that are related to
it. That's right. You know, this is the whole thing, that once you start getting into this area of connection, it's never ending. So I'm never exhausted in the sense of having something to say about this theme.
Because that's why in your title, Gratitude in the Bible, Gracious God. So you have, again, gracious. It's also something that refers to gratitude.
That's right. We often use lots of words in everyday language, but we never quite think, you know, oh, you're particularly gracious or whatever, and that the base root of it is grace, you know, and that's the thing that you discover as you get into language and you look at the biblical text, and you know that it's inspired, but then you have to unpick some of the more delicate parts of the expressions that are there and the language, and go into analyzing the words, but not so that it becomes too complex, but that you really have something to hang your life on, as it were. You know, that there's something that's of substance and it's meaty and it's great for pondering and reflection.
So when you come, you make it easier for people who would like to know more about the depth and the context in the Bible, because you have already spent your time researching on it. And so that will be really interesting, because it can open up a whole new world.
That's right. That's how I always hope that is the case.
Thank you very much, Father Kevin. Thank you for having come to the studio. And I'm looking forward to your talk on the 21st of November.
Thank you, Beata. It's always a great pleasure to come along and talk.
Thank you. And what else is coming up in the center for the next weeks? Well, we have next week, Friday, the 27th of September, and Saturday, the 28th of September, Kevin Gallagher, who will facilitate a weekend workshop with the title Rediscovering Fire, Exploring the Spirituality of Teilhard de Chardin. What do you say it in English, Teilhard de Chardin? It's pronounced a bit differently.
Teilhard de Chardin.
And well, this workshop is in the Ignatian tradition. And on the 1st of October, we are going to celebrate the International Day of the Older Person. And we'll have a special workshop on Tai Chi, facilitated by Jocelyn Watkin. This workshop will be enjoyable, informative, and practical. That's the 1st of October, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And on Thursday, the 3rd of October, from 10:30 to 12:30, we will have a glimpse into the Korean culture with Cecilia Kim, who will teach us more about the special Korean tea ceremony. 10:30 to 12:30, 3rd of October. And on the 4th of October, Marta Cullen will show us how we can express gratitude with a circle dance. As it is written in Jeremiah 31:13, dance and be glad. It's the 4th of October, 7 to 9 p.m. And then please remember, Thursday the 21st of November, so it's only 2 months ahead, 7 to 9 p.m., Father Kevin Waldie will give his presentation on Gratitude in the Bible, Gracious God of Israel, and Jesus, Son of God. So we're looking forward to it, Father Kevin. And I'm sure that you'll bring a wonderful PowerPoint presentation again, so that you don't have to write down everything and you capture all the technical terms. Is that right?
Exactly right. That's right. You need the visual element to help you understand.
Because Father Kevin is also a specialist on films. He loves films and the images with it.
Exactly.
And for all events at our center, please register with us per phone at Auckland 09-638-6238 or through our website at www.mercyspiritualitycenter.org.nz. I wish you all a blessed Friday, a good week ahead, and I hope to see you again soon at our Mercy Spirituality Center. And thank you very much, Father Kevin, for coming.
Thank you, Beata.